It's that time of the week. Welcome to Digital Creator. My name is Dylan Schmidt. I've got a lot to cram in this 20-minute episode, so let's dive right in. Actually, before we dive in, I want to bring up one thing. This is a tech-related thing. Shure, the company that makes the microphone I'm talking into right now, I use the Shure SM7B, which is possibly, I believe, the most popular podcast microphone used by all of the top podcasters, used by, you know what, some of the best looking... No, I'm just kidding. if you're listening for the first time, that would be a weird first part of this podcast to hear. Hey, if it's your first time, welcome. And if you're a return listener, it's good to have you back. So Shure, the company that makes awesome microphones, this week released the Shure MV7 Plus, which is somewhere in between like an entry-level microphone and the Shure SM7B. It's more closer to the Shure SM7B. It's not a cheap microphone. It's $279. The SM7B is $399. The Shure MV7 Plus looks pretty exciting, though. They haven't updated the MV7 in quite a while. And I'm just going to read some of the key features about this updated microphone because it's got me interested. And so interested, in fact, that I reached out to Shure. So we'll see if they send me one or shut me down. But it's got a multicolor LED touch panel, which I could give or take, but it says select from 16.8 million hues and use it as an audio level meter or switch on an eye-catching pulse effect. Not a big fan of the whole like flashy light thing. I think it's a little distracting. It's got the quick mute function. So you can easily mute it, which that could also be bad because what if you didn't mean to mute it? Then it's also got a real-time denoiser. So it says the live denoiser uses cutting-edge DSP technology to eliminate ambient noise in your room and complement the mic's voice isolation technology to make sure you sound great even in imperfect recording conditions. That sounds cool. It's got another thing called a digital popper stopper, which is a virtual pop filter that removes harsh plosive sounds so you can avoid acoustic distractions on your audio tracks, and a physical pop filter on camera when you're filming. I love Shure, but like that is totally a marketing thing, a popper stopper. I believe the last Shure MV7 and the SM7B have built-in pop filters. I don't know, popper stoppers, a little marketing speak there. It has an improved auto level mode. USB-C, it works with the app. USB-C is huge because I had micro USB before, which is outdated, and it also has the XLR outputs. All in all, this is an exciting microphone. Like, I don't normally talk about microphones, as you know, or as you might know on this podcast, but I'm kind of excited about this one. Before even testing it, just came out yesterday, already in the runnings for me of like, this could be up there. I can already see myself recommending it a lot. Now, some reviews could come out and it could be a total flop, so everything I'm saying is just completely based on the fact of like, I'm excited about this new piece of gear. Is it all accurate? No idea. There was always a problem with the Shure MV7 windscreen. People would put the Shure SM7B windscreen on the MV7. And I'm looking at the MV7 Plus right now. And I can see that they designed the MV7 Plus to be more like the Shure SM7B. It's a little bit longer, similar looking to the SM7B, more canister looking, if that makes sense. Longer, I don't know, more hot dog. Let's dive in. So first up, I want to share with you, and it's only been like 24 hours, actually less than 24 hours since I learned about this, but I've already talked about it so much, so I'm going to make sure I talk about it a little bit differently here. Bear with me. Yes, Google Gemini updated their Google Gemini Pro, which is their AI version of... I'm doing a terrible job explaining this. Google Gemini Pro, if you don't know, is like ChatGPT or Anthropic's Claude, very similar. Maybe you tried Google Bard. Maybe you're already familiar with Google Gemini. Well, it's a similar thing to that, although it's not as user-friendly to sign up, but it's still not that hard once you get in. But they updated it yesterday with some really interesting updates that I want to share quickly. And then I want to share a little bit about my approach to this because there's some cool stuff happening. So Google Gemini, with this update, it's now free. Before, you had to have, I believe, like a join a wait list. You had to maybe be a developer or something like that. Now, as of this recording, you can just hop right in. No sign up required other than like having your Google account, but you don't need to join a wait list. You get instant access. It's all free. I believe before it might have costed money, but it doesn't. So everything I'm telling you that you can do right now, I've tested and you can do it for free, which is awesome because these AI subscriptions, I don't know about you, but starting to catch up with me. I look at Perplexity, I look at Poe, I look at ChatGPT, Claude. I want to subscribe to the AI stuff. You know, I use it just a little bit, but I'm like, ooh, I'd like to see if I get a better output with the pro version. Doesn't matter with Google Gemini because it's free. And there's some cool things that are different about Google Gemini. Like number one, it's free. No. Number one, it has a 1 million token context window. Now, to put that in perspective, Claude from Anthropic is much higher than ChatGPT. Claude is a 200,000 token context window. The easiest way to think of it is it's around the same number of words. So 200,000 tokens is roughly 200,000 words, sometimes less, but it's an easier way to think about it. And with ChatGPT, the token context window is, I believe, around 32,000. I think they have a model if you're using the API, which day to day, I don't know how many people listening to this are using the API version of ChatGPT, but I think that would then go up to like 128 or 126, I forget, 126,000, I should say. So regardless, Google Gemini is 1 million, which is a lot. And what's cool about this is if you've ever had a conversation with ChatGPT and you're talking to it, and then it just seems to forget what you were talking about earlier in the conversation, that's because you went past the context window and you hit outside of that 32,000 on average, sometimes much lower with ChatGPT. So you can only have conversations that are so in depth for so long before the AI you're chatting with will completely forget about what you were talking about, and it won't be as useful and it won't put out as many good outputs. Now with Google Gemini, since it has a 1 million token context window, that's pretty useful. You could have some like long conversations with it. And if you didn't know, like these aren't all pulling from the same language model, if you will. They all have their own unique way, right? OpenAI is different than Google, different than Claude. Claude, I've found, is really good at writing stuff, better than ChatGPT and Google Gemini, in my opinion. But Google Gemini, because it's so many times larger context window than Claude and ChatGPT, there are certain things that you could do with it that you just couldn't do with Claude right now or ChatGPT. And I really see this AI race as the competition is heating up against these three big companies. And there are more than just these three, but the three I'm talking about here, they're, you know, racing each other to be the best. And the consumer, us, benefits from that because we just get the best product at the lowest price. Now, yes, there's all sorts of things we could go into, like the data that they're using to train the models. There's all these like ethical questions. What does the future of AI look like? Absolutely. So I'm kind of like looking through this like a fairy tale lens, I guess, if you will, for just a second in a perfect world. And those are all other important topics to be talking about, the ethical concerns and things like that. Now, the free version of Google, most likely, I haven't read the fine print, but the free version of Google, I would imagine they're probably taking your data, right? Like if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. Now, I know they have a paid version that, from my understanding, you know, has more privacy and they don't train on those models. I don't know. Like that's outside of my scope, but I can tell you this, a 1 million token context window is pretty useful for some things. And I thought I would share what I'm kind of thinking around having this type of access to AI. It's uploading large data sets. And we didn't even get into the second cool part of this Google Gemini yet, so hang with me for just a moment. But I could, theoretically, if I wanted to improve my sales calls for content clips, for example, I could upload four of what I believe are the best books on selling. For example, I haven't read all these books, but let's just go with me. Gap Selling, The Science of Selling, Never Split the Difference, and The Psychology of Selling. Upload those books to Google Gemini and I just say, hey, read these books because I'm about to give you some questions and it's important you know these books and you're intimately familiar with them. Google says, okay, gives you some summary or something. Next, you tell Google, hey, here's four of my most recent sales calls that I had. I want you to go through and analyze them and identify my strengths and weaknesses through the lens of the four books that you've read. And I want you to give me feedback on my strengths, my weaknesses, and opportunities that I may have missed, and give me a plan for improving in the future. Now, what's crazy about this is like this whole thing that I just shared with you really would not take long. Like before, you know, how much could you really give the AI? Not that much. But now you could give it four books, all in the same conversation, and four of your recent sales calls. And here's the crazy part. You don't even have to like do anything to the sales calls. You don't need to go get transcripts. You don't need to convert them into text. You could just give it the audio. And what's crazy with this Google Gemini Pro update is it can analyze your vocal tone and identify the emotion. So it's going beyond just identifying text. Text is one way that we communicate, right? With a vocal tone, there's like nuances that can get missed in text. We all know that. Just like you like podcasts, you know, if I was just sharing everything I'm saying through text, it would sound slightly different. So imagine that for just a moment, like that type of data. You, of course, could assume that Google is familiar with those books that I shared, but directly giving it that information in the conversation, because the job of the AI is to make you happy and give you an output that you're happy with. Like that's what they build these things to do. So the better input, the better output, and giving it more specific data will give you more specific actionable items you can take on that data. Does that make sense? And the Google update that I was going to break into two parts, but I kind of already covered here, is the vocal aspect of this, right? So you could, and I tested this with my own podcast here, is upload audio. So I uploaded the last four episodes of this show, and it told me what I could improve. It told me strengths, and it told me, you know, why people would like the show. Now, I didn't give it specific things I was looking for. In fact, I don't even know that I asked it to tell me what I could improve. Just kind of went there. So that might have been why I got a generic sounding output from Google Gemini. But I would imagine if I came in wanting to, you know, improve a specific thing in this podcast and I'm like, Google Gemini, help me identify, you know, whatever, it would probably be able to do that. So I share this because I want you to feel more in control with using AI tools. And it's exciting how we could use these tools to our benefit. At the same time, yeah, it's completely terrifying, the ethics of it. But at the end of the day, I think it's important that we continue the conversation. Next up, I thought I'd share with you some tests, or one test that I've been running lately. And just kind of a transparency thing around social media and building my own email newsletter. When it comes to links in social media profiles, from my own testing, adding multiple links in a social media bio is a double-edged sword. On one hand, you can like promote multiple things. Like you could promote, for me, I could promote content clips, the creator club, my podcast, my email newsletter, all these different things. And it dilutes the effectiveness of the call to action in the bio. So if I'm like, hey, go to my bio and get this thing, they might get confused. And there's an old marketing or sales saying, when you confuse, you lose. I think that's true in social media bios and social media links. And when we put so much effort into growing on social media, part of that is like utilizing that space. It's very like I have many hundreds and hundreds of people or thousands click the link in my profile across my social media profiles. So it's important that I optimize what's in that section, right? And something that I've been starting to test, and I'm curious how this plays out, is I've just put an email opt-in for getting a list of the gear I use for recording my videos. It's one of my most asked questions. Hey Dylan, what camera do you use? How do you get that to look like that? What microphone do you recommend? Like so many people are looking for recommendations. I'm like, it just hit me like, oh, I need to just make that as the first thing. Because if you're interested in gear, you're probably interested in content clips or the Creator Club. I send out an email that in my opinion is like useful. I try to make it useful. I'm making it for you, not me. And so I'm like starting to connect those dots of like, huh, here's how I could streamline this process. So I removed any multiple selection in the bio. Now, it feels a little weird doing that because when it's reduced to just one option in the bio, it's like, oh, this is like yes or no. But that's also what makes a powerful decision. Like you either want this or you don't. And entering your email to access some information, which in this case is a, you know, the gear I recommend. It gives me more opportunity down the line to reach out via email and share about content clips, the Creator Club, my newsletter, all of these things. So I'm testing it. It hasn't been that long yet, but some questions that I have for myself that I'm asking before I finish this test are these three. Number one, is just an email opt-in best for my social media bio and for me to hit my goals, which would be to welcome people into the Creator Club, book calls for content clips, and grow my email newsletter. Now, there's multiple goals there, and I could weigh those differently. But the question again, is just an email opt-in best for me on social media? Number two would be, how well does an opt-in like the one I've created convert? This kind of plays off the first question, but I made a simple page and then a simple email follow-up sequence that delivers what I assume to be valuable for the people who are accessing the information. But does that create members for the Creator Club? Does that help people book calls with content clips? Does that turn people that are casually engaged with my social media content into people that are listeners of this podcast or paid members of my community? And then the third question would be, at what point will the opt-in go down? You know what I mean? Like, at what point is it not worthwhile to leave that same opt-in, that same list of my gear recommendations? Should I update that? Should I take a break from that? So I'll be looking at that data and not watching it like so closely, because I don't want to obsess over the numbers and make, you know, emotional decisions in that instant, but it's something that I'm tracking. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it's important, for one, to be testing this stuff. And for two, I wanted to share what questions I'm asking myself, because those questions will then inform what I'm tracking and why I'm tracking it, if that makes sense. Last thing for today is kind of on this topic of AI, but also like just the heart-to-heart as creators. And that's the topic of values. So someone left a comment on one of my TikTok videos and they were hesitant or concerned with the idea of creating a podcast because they thought that, you know, what if in the future people take the content that they post through the podcast video or whatever and then manipulate it to say something that they didn't intend to say? I think that's a fantastic topic and one I'm not about to just like fully dive into here, but it got me thinking because I had a drive after I saw that comment. I was running some errands. I was just thinking, I'm like, you know what? Like, what's the thing that AI will have trouble duplicating? Or if it will manipulate it, like, what would make it seem so inauthentic, so obviously fake that anyone who knows you would be like, that's not real? And it brought me back to this idea of values. So tools like ChatGPT or Google Gemini or Claude, they have these like values set in their coding, right? From the company that made them, Anthropic, Google, OpenAI, and they're supposed to have their like own set of values. Now, I don't know how they weigh these values or anything like that, but regardless, thinking about your own values as a creator. So here's like a list of example values like ambition, authenticity, collaboration, gratitude, honesty, integrity, or risk-taking, self-discipline, self-expression, self-respect. As I'm saying that list, personally, I think AI could do a good job at, you know, taking some of these and duplicating it for good, I guess you could say, but it might miss certain things. Like with me, you might notice that I weigh self-expression pretty heavily. I have a certain way of talking. I add in certain random humor in my content. And that's something that AI can't duplicate, which is like these subtle nuances of my own personality, but those are my values. And when you instill your values in your content, it creates this, for a lack of a better term, brand identity, right? Brand seems so like vanilla in what we're talking about, but it creates this like unique fingerprint of you and how you communicate with the world. And while AI might be able to fool somebody with, you know, manipulating your own unique voice and things like that, and it could do a lot of harm. I'm not saying this is like all or nothing. It could do a lot of harm, manipulating you to take advantage of someone close to you and all that. But there's certain elements of your personality. Now, what I'm saying, of course, could be outdated soon. It could pick up on those values and whatnot, but there becomes like patterns. Like we have our own patterns of how we show up in relationships, of how we want to be perceived externally, of how we want to be perceived internally, that causes us to say something. And those nuances, now, I don't think we consciously pay attention to all those things when we're talking to somebody. I think they kind of run in the subconscious, but they're there regardless. They're there running in the background and it tells us, is this person safe or not safe? Does this person seem to be okay? Like, have you ever talked to someone and you go, is this person okay? Like, what causes you to think, is this person all right? Are they doing okay? Like, they seem hungry or tired or whatever it is, right? And when you think about your own values, I guess this is like my homework for you as we sign off today's episode. What are your top 2 to 3 values that you lead with in your content? Now, if you Google list of values, you'll get a ton of words that will help you make an informed decision about what those values could be. But I think this is a great North Star to have as a creator, is identifying your values and leading with those, bringing those forward in everything you do. And if something feels off, think about, are my values included in this? Because I bet that's why it feels off, is it's missing part of your values. All right, that's it for this week. I'll catch you in the next one.